For this week's meeting of the EdTech Club, I wanted to get back into the topic of esports. You see, way back in episode 5, if you'll recall, we talked about the activity of competitive video gaming with Isaac Arrington, who works with the Dallas Mavericks professional gaming team. Now, I wanted to revisit the topic and give us some real granular ways that educators can start to get involved with esports. The fact is, the interest might be there already. So I spoke with
Kyle Berger. I am the Chief Technology Officer in Grapevine Colleyville ISD. We're located here in North Texas area with about 14,000 students, currently playing competitive esports at 3 high schools with over 155 competitive athletes and 30 support position athletes.
So he seemed like the perfect person to go to get a sense of what this activity is really about for students and teachers. As it turns out, I'm not the first person to ask. The way he describes it, he gets calls from all over the place.
A week, there's probably at least 3 media calls a week from various publications. Everything from Wall Street Journal, Financial Times, to local just magazines or newspapers. Then also a lot of school districts. And then companies that are trying to figure out how to get a piece of the esports market. And then here recently, cities calling, reaching out, asking how to develop esports local leagues, so rec leagues within the city that are based around esports. So it's quite interesting how the various different areas of calls and everything have been building here.
So for this week's edition of the EdTech Club, we're going to talk to Kyle as our guest speaker. He's going to tell us all about what teachers and educators need to know if they're getting started with an esports program at their school. He's going to talk to us about the competitive landscape, the types of games he's playing, and the types of skills that students will develop through the activity. And it all starts right now. Hey everybody, welcome back to the EdTech Club. I'm Andrew Rausch. So, esports is the hot topic and it just keeps getting hotter. So, we will get right into our conversation with Kyle Berger all about esports. I guess the place to start then, you've probably had some practice with this. If I am a teacher, maybe a classroom teacher or someone working in faculty at a school, and I've gotten the idea to start esports in my school, or I've been voluntold to do so. If somebody there has an interest in it, what do you tell those folks? What are the things that a classroom teacher is going to want to know right off the bat to be able to get involved in this new world of competition and of learning confidently?
What a lot of people don't realize is how large esports is. So $1 billion industry. Currently, you know, there's over 200 colleges that are giving scholarships out to students. And with that, the professional league overall, more people watch the online competitions around esports than the Super Bowl, NBA playoffs, those other kind of events. And usually when we start mentioning those stats, people are quite surprised. They didn't realize the size of this. So what it does for us in education, because what is our mission, our sole mission, what it all comes down to for all of us in education is to prepare students for the future, right? Help make them be successful in means once they leave us. And as we see this growing massive industry of esports coming, we need to be able to adapt our students' skill sets to fit this need. So much like on the playing field at school for football, you know, less than 1% are going to be that pro athlete. But there's a ton of jobs that surround that type of position or you know, football in general. The same happens with the side of esports. So it's bigger than just the player themselves. So when a school approaches and says, or somebody comes up and says, hey, we want to start esports, to me, I usually start the conversation, it goes into two directions. And it's really, what direction do you want to go? Are you looking at just an after-school club gathering kids together to play? Or are you looking at the true competitive gameplay, much like professional esports or collegiate esports, because there's two different directions to go. For us here in Grapevine, Colleyville, we are on the competitive esports game. And that mirrors traditionally just like our traditional sports. So whereas we have after-school practice structure, daily practices. Today is a holiday, but my esports teams are actually up here practicing, doing scrimmaging, doing game film review, preparing for the season, and those kind of things. So really looking at it from which level of participation you want to take it from your campus. One thing for sure is I can almost guarantee you, you are going to have a level of interest on your campus that you might underestimate. For us, it was a great underestimation when we started, the amount of students interested in being involved. So really getting your mind around the framework of what you're wanting to do and having it set to get the expectations of what your community or school, school board or others have around esports in general. Because they're typically, as we all know, unfortunately, there's a stigma with video games, and typically it's violence. So for us, our big approach to begin with was having those community and parent meetings to step up front and explain the industry, how much we are focusing on. For us, we're focusing on the team building aspect. So the games that we're going to play are all team-based games. We're not going to play any realistic violent games or first-person shooter, FPS is what they call it in the industry. We're just not going to play any of those. So let's calm those fears and put them aside. And all of our gameplay is going to be in person. We're going to bring our students together to work as a team collaboratively on communication skills, all the skills of normal traditional sports, just in a different fashion. Mm-hmm. But what we're going to also be able to find is that esports bridges that gap between all different types of players. It doesn't matter your demographics, ethnicity, your physical ability, your gender. It doesn't matter. And that's what we've been able to successfully find inside of our program.
And I guess this isn't something we've I'm not sure everyone quite knows this, but as you know, esports are spectator sports. And a huge part of what makes esports viable as an activity, why it's different than just gaming, just playing games, is that it is streamed and watched, and usually watched live. So that kind of speaks to you're not just building a sort of competitive team to play this game, but you're building the entire infrastructure of a small enterprise. You have to build the kinds of things that they would build if they were outside of the, say, infrastructure of a school, where they have to come up with their basically their business plan, to put it one way.
Absolutely. So that's kind of the big unexpected part for a lot of folks when they start going down this. You know, they just expected there's going to be these kids that like to play games. We're going to get them all together. Then all of a sudden you realize, wow, there's a lot to this. It is like a small business. We've got our marketing teams. Each one of our players are developing their online brand themselves so that they can gather followers and build up their streaming, because that's a thing to be able to offer to colleges and do that as well. Down to graphic design teams, you know, we got people over here that are making the logos and how that's going to, you know, advertise, and then approaching advertisers for the stream, you know, to try to get sponsorship so we can mention you know, all different types of aspects that people are like, wow, I didn't think about that. I said, I know, you know, for me back playing video games was I pulled the cartridge out and we blew in the little cartridge and hopefully it was going to work when we put it in the thing, you know, and the unit and started playing. Now there's so much thought, analysis and everything that goes into it. It is, it's a small business.
And so, You kind of pointed toward this, speaking about, you know, there is obviously a concern just from the cultural conversation around video games that this could be a school promoting something that has violence in it. So I guess the next question then is, what games do you play? What are these games like for someone who has maybe never played any of these games or who doesn't play a lot of video games besides maybe Candy Crush?
There you go.
What are we looking at?
Absolutely. You know, if you would have asked me 3 years ago any of these game titles, I would have deer in the headlights. I wouldn't have known what you're talking about. So the strategy that we took here is really was watching the collegiate gameplay. So we wanted to find the games that are popular in the college that are working on the college scene and then professional growth as well to the professional area. And we wanted to focus on team games, meaning, you know, more than one player. It's just not a solo player game. So for us, we settled on League of Legends and Rocket League as our two primary games that we started our structure. League of Legends is a five-person game, which carries substitutes. You know, we have one or two subs that can fill in. Rocket League is a three-person game, which we carry subs as well if we need to get them involved. So that was our focus, and it was all because we wanted, again, to work the whole aspect around the sport, the team communication, the working together, the collaborative play. I mean, just all the different aspects that happen in any other sport, we wanted to be there in person with the kids to build that program overall. So those were the main ones that we started. This year, we started branching out into Smash Brothers. Smash Brothers is a Mario-type Nintendo game. It can be played in a single fashion or somewhat teams, to where people go up against each other and you pick who on your team might be best to go against them, and still in a one-on-one fashion. Mm-hmm. We brought that on because it was more popular in our lower grades and into middle school. So we kind of wanted an entry point in for our students with those games. So that's where we brought Smash in this year, to kind of help bridge that gap in.
And so as we think about this growing support mechanism, when we think about the field of play out there, I think something else worth delving into, I mean, there's now a huge competitive infrastructure built around esports, and even at the secondary and level. So what does it look like out there? If I have a team, let's say we've practiced up Rocket League or something like that, and we want to go out into the world and start competing, what is out there on that landscape? Who do we go through to do this?
For high school, my perspective is there's two leagues that really stand out. There's Play VS League, and then there's the high school esports league itself. Both of those kind of have different structures, but are focused solely on the high school sports scene. And what's important with that is the ability for me to tell my parents and my community that I know without a doubt, 100%, I'm playing against students at XYZ school sitting in that school. We're not just playing with a bunch of strangers online or anything else. We're playing with students in another facility on a closed gaming network. The other thing to consider when looking at leagues to choose is which leagues possibly already have licensing rights for these games. So you mentioned earlier, like Candy Crush or some of these handheld games, much like other games, you know how you can buy up extra, you know, skills or tools or things inside of the games?
Yeah.
That's also the same in some of these games as well. So for example, the Play VS League, they own and work the rights with Riot, who manufactures the game League of Legends. Right. And by doing that, they can unlock all levels and all skills in the game. And so what that does is really makes it a level playing field for all teams that enter into play for them. Now, other leagues might not have that licensing ability, so they can't unlock all the different levels. You're just kind of going in with what you have, which maybe that's, you know, that's fine for you. It was a big thing for us to be able to, you know, play at an even playing field with everybody. So we chose that route as well. And then just looking at the structure of the leagues in general, as far as, you know, where they're focusing their gameplay on, is it spread all around the world? Is it, you know, because down to being such a global ability, down to your time zones is a big deal. You know, if I'm having to match up and play with people all over the U.S., it can get difficult for us to coordinate times. Fortunately for us, Texas being our own small country in a sense, there's so much activity growing in Texas. We'll have plenty of Texas leagues for all of us to join in and play in under both of these different organizations. And then seeing where the organizations are building overall. So Play VS is tied with the National Federation of High School Student Associations, which also has a back kind of connection into UIL here in Texas. So it's important to see as many states across the country have already sanctioned esports as a just like any other sport, to watch to see how UIL over the next couple of years might be positioning itself as well to fully sanction esports. So building your program with that in mind. And the basics of that is, even though it's not sanctioned for us, it's already a for our students, a no pass, no play scenario. Attendance is important. Discipline is important. And we develop our structure much like our other sports, where we have a varsity team, a JV team, those kind of scenarios as well.
So it sounds cool. I know my students want to do it. I'm ready to get going. The next question is, as I move forward and start to look into these options, how I want to organize my team, what I want the emphasis to be, getting them to sort of determine their desires and needs and what's going to fit, where should I be looking for resources? Where are the best places to learn about this activity, to keep up with it, to learn from others?
So there's a lot of various resources online. If you go to both of those leagues mentioned, you can already join or put in as like you want to be a coach. Let's say for like Play VS, I can sign up to be a coach or an interested coach, and that'll get me access to lots of different resources to kind of help explain and walk you through the process. There's various other paths, but the thing you're going to find too, what I'm finding, especially here in Texas for all of us, is that everybody's open to sharing and talking with each other on how we can develop and build these programs out. It's just finding the right need or the right fit for your school district, making sure you have that support from administration, school board, if needed, and others that are going to embrace this, and then going from that direction. But get out there, look around, call up, look online, see what schools around you are already doing that. Go see how it's working. Reach out and have the conversations about it. And don't go too fast into it. You know, like if this, we're talking here in October, don't have the expectation that we're going to be playing in the fall league, which is going to be starting here in about two weeks. You know, let's set some realistic expectations that we can start working on developing and building our team out now, but we're really going to focus on our competitive play in the spring. So build into it naturally. Don't rush into it. And listen to the kids. Let them have a voice in kind of how we're developing and building the program as well.
Are there other like direct educational applications you're seeing in doing this?
So absolutely. So overall, whenever you can connect to students, as we know as educators, connecting the way they live or things that they are engaged in, and we can incorporate that into what we're doing with learning, it's a win-win. So there's all aspects besides just the player as well. So we have the broadcast team. So this year, for example, in our school district, we have 155 true esports athletes. Then I have 35 additional student support positions. That's everything from marketers to analysts to streamers to technical assistants to just the broadcast setup team, all different aspects that fit into it. And if we start looking at just stepping back into the general career path that we already had in school, we already have video broadcasting classes. So we modify video broadcasting to online streaming classes for our kids to be able to work into that aspect of it. We already had marketing classes. Now we work on online marketing, marketing towards team marketing, esports marketing, player development, those kind of things. So it's incorporating writing skills, the communication skills aspect of it. And then, of course, on the player side, our player development. And that's where the whole week, the whole practice kind of comes about, because it's not just sitting down in front of the screen playing a game. There's strategy that's involved, and there's actual physical fitness and nutritional aspects that we teach in correlation with it with our kids. So before we have matches, there's stretching involved. There's general exercise, get us going, get our cognitive skills ready to get into the gameplay and then get involved. And then, of course, the mental aspect of it when you're in the game and you're in the heat of the moment, you know, how to properly express yourself. I don't know if you have kids or you've seen kids play video games online. They're wearing their headsets, you know, talking back and forth with each other. Sometimes they can get a little intense and maybe colorful. But we have to step back and have a different conversation about how now they're representing a team and how their actions are, you know, magnified so much more, representing their school, their team, their personal brand, and other things as well. So all sorts of learning opportunities that come out from the kids, even as basic down to what is going to be your screen name on the screen when you're playing.
Right.
Really thinking about that for how you're going to be perceived online.
Well, we're running out of time for this meeting. I know you guys want to get out, but the bell has not rung yet. So we still have time for a little bit of homework. First up, before next week's meeting, go ahead and check out the show notes in your podcast player or at tcea.org/edtechclub. There you'll find links to many of the things, including the leagues that Kyle talked about in this episode and more. So go ahead and give those a look and start thinking about how you might integrate esports into your school. When it comes to extra credit, well, we want to hear from you if you're attempting to get an esports club started or if you have an established club. If you got tips, you've got funny stories, strange stories, horror stories, warning stories, or even inspirational ones, go ahead and send it to us at podcast@tcea.org. And if you like, we can share it with our audience. And of course, that email address, podcast@tcea.org, is a great way to get in touch with us for any reason. And of course, you can follow TCEA on your favorite social media websites. And if you enjoy the show, don't forget to rate and review it in your podcast player and on iTunes. So that's it for this week. We hope to learn something, and we hope you'll come back next week for another meeting of the EdTech Club. Until then, I'm Andrew Rausch. Thanks for being a part of the club. EdTech Club is a production of TCEA. To learn more and to join, go to tcea.org.